in a tax-sheltered account, just text the words SHELTER to 989898. Text SHELTER to 989898 and learn how to shelter your IRA or 401k with gold.
Now.
Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station, FM 107.1. Joining us in just a moment, Cesar Harvell of Harvell & Collins. Looking forward to the conversation. Had a very interesting conversation last week, one that I think a lot of people were totally unaware of. And so I'm confident that Cecil's going to rehash or refresh our memory on that. But before we do that, let me just bring you up to date on the weather. It's going to be gorgeous out there today. We are now seeing some partly cloudy skies, and we'll have some clouds in the skies throughout the day. But we're looking at temperatures to be well up in the upper 60s, low 70s. We're seeing this brief spate of spring for a few days, and then cold weather returns this weekend. But today, gorgeous weather, an opportunity to get outside. Overnight lows only in the upper 50s.
It's time for Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you have a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now at 252-222-4848.
And joining us this morning, Cecil Harvell, Harvell & Collins. Cecil, well,
good morning.
Wes, good morning,
Lockwood.
And thank you very much for being with us, as always. We had an interesting conversation last week, and I understand it's going to be a continuation of that today?
Yeah, it is. Let's broaden it, though, a bit. And really the topic for today would be, who has a right to inheritance? Who has a right to inheritance? And Lockwood, that begins with the spouse, but let's pause a moment and address a question that we really do get, unfortunately, quite often, which is that, you know, as a child, adult, do I have a right to inherit from my parents? Mm-hmm. Or the parent might say, do I structure my last will and testament so that I'm not including a particular child?
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, this is unfortunate that we have to talk about this, isn't it, Lockwood? But the bottom line is that due to whatever circumstances which you nor I can judge, there certainly are parents that do, for whatever reason, need to or feel that they need to exclude a child. And so here's the answer to the question. There absolutely is no right to inheritance on behalf of a child. You can very easily be excluded from inheritance by your parents or grandparents. There just simply is no right as a child to an inheritance in the state of North Carolina. We hear things like, well, I need to give them $10 or I need to give $100. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I've heard every single permutation of a monetary sum.
Right.
The bottom line, my friend Lockwood, is that there doesn't have to be a monetary sum. It's just that the language needs to be, very clear and not questionable. So, you know, a sentence at the beginning of the will, I have a child named John Doe. I hereby make no provision for my child, John Doe. This will is to be interpreted without any provision for my child, John Doe. So you don't have to give them $10, $5, $100, $1,000. You don't have to do that. You just have to have language in your will that is clear and not ambiguous about the fact that you are excluding that child. So when a client comes in the office and has an instruction to us that they choose to exclude a child, that's something, Lockwood, that doesn't require a whole lot of conversation.
Wow.
It just is a request of a client, and we're there to serve the client and to guide them in the law. And as I've said now repeatedly, there is no right to an inheritance on behalf of a child. Now, let's twist that up a bit, Lockwood, and have the client say, I do not wish my spouse to inherit anything. Mm-hmm. My spouse has inherited a large sum of money. My spouse is my second spouse, and we have children from a prior marriage, and we have agreed that our inheritances go to our children. She doesn't expect anything from me. I don't expect anything from her. We've discussed this. We've agreed on this. And so, Mr. Harvell, please write a last will and testament accordingly. Now, Lockwood, we have something we have to talk about.
Uh-huh.
Because in the state of North Carolina, and as to the issue of who has the right to inheritance, absolutely a spouse in the state of North Carolina has a right to inheritance. It doesn't matter whether it's a first career marriage, or whether it's a second or third marriage, whether it's a new marriage, an old marriage. The bottom line is that once there is a certificate of marriage on record, in any county, in any state, then there's a legitimate marriage. And the bottom line is that this right to inheritance then would accrue. And so, absolutely, there is a right to inheritance by a surviving spouse. Now, that's the general rule in the state of North Carolina, Lockwood. That right to inheritance is going to then ripen, if you will, during the years of the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if the and I have this here because I don't try to do it by memory. If we're talking about less than 5 years, then it's 15%. And if we're talking 5 years, meaning if just look 5 years in 1 month,
mm-hmm.
but less than 10 years, it is 25%. And then if it is 10 years, can be 10 years in 1 month, but less than 15, then it's 33%. And after 15, it is 50%. So Lockwood, we see that the percentage that the spouse has a right to inherit is really quite significant. I mean, 15%, you know, 20%, 50%, those are high percentages.
Right.
And so the general rule in the state of North Carolina is going to be that the spouse has this percentage interest in the estate of their deceased spouse. This is also known in the state of North Carolina as the elective share.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, if the will provides otherwise, then the spouse, the surviving spouse, can then file an election to elect this share, notwithstanding what the will happens to say.
Really? Okay, so the will may in fact say, we have agreed that we're going to distribute our, and if I understand
right.
this correctly, we've agreed to distribute our assets accordingly. Still, in the case of a surviving spouse, that elective share still exists?
It absolutely does. And the exception to that rule would be, Lockwood, that the parties have entered into a prenuptial agreement that waives this elective share, or it's a bit more complex because it requires more independent representation on behalf of the husband and the wife, but the bottom line is that also a postnuptial agreement. So if there is an agreement, and if it waives the elective share, and if it is a valid and enforceable and at arm's length agreement and both parties had independent representation, then if all of those factors come together, then the elective share would not apply for the surviving spouse because they have waived it.
Uh-huh.
And that's been explained to them ahead of time, and they understand that. And so as a result of their waiver, this waiver, of course, has to be before the death, obviously, mm-hmm. of their spouse. But as a result of the waiver, they would not be able to elect this elective share. Otherwise, if the will says things like you just mentioned, Lockwood. My wife and I have agreed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have children from a prior marriage. Any kind of all of this kind of language, that's not going to cut off, if you will, the right to elect the elective share. That's not a waiver.
Then I'm going to take it down one generation. Then it's conceivable, if I understand this correctly, and we'll touch on this before we go to the break with Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins. And I've got another question I want to ask about wills here in a moment. But then is it conceivable that I, the child, who obviously has not been written into the will, insist that my mother receive her elective share, which might accrue to me through her will? Is that conceivable?
Well, yes, Lockwood, but with a little bit of explanation.
Okay.
What you're getting at really is an example that I gave last week, Wes and I, on our talk last week with you, which we always so much enjoy, Lockwood.
Thank you.
You do ask the best questions. The bottom line here is that what happens is that it's not the child's right to elect the share, but if the surviving spouse is infirm for some reason, meaning, you know, advanced age,
right?
Some early dementia,
right.
Not the ability to understand the circumstances as well. Then we all know that adult children have tremendous influence over their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have had files where, due to the adult child having the power of attorney of their mother or father, or just simply having a tremendous amount of influence over their mother or father, they then, of course, encourage their mother or father, either legally through a power of attorney or just simply in word and deed, they encourage their parent to make this elective share, even though historically the file would indicate that the parties, when they were younger and got married, had children from a prior marriage, they agreed that this statute would not apply. Now, they didn't put that in writing in the form of a prenuptial or postnuptial, but they just simply agreed to that. And now, when the facts get applied, the parties are much older. The father has died and the mother is still living, but she's 91 years old. The adult child exerts this influence, and we are, down the creek without a paddle, as
right.
they say.
So, I want to get back to that with you, Cecil, because I'm going to tease my question to you here in a moment. But we have a lot of people that are relocated in North Carolina. And I think that as they are retiring and working on their estates, this is a topic I'm wondering people should consider. I'm looking forward to the answer to that with Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins. We have with us this morning Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins. We talked about this last week, the issue of elective shares, something I was not aware of. And Cecil, I want to just real quickly recap and make mention of the fact that the conclusion on or the solution to the elective shares is done outside of the will, which surprised me. Number one, it's outside the will. Number two, really needs to be established if you're looking at a second or a second marriage, third marriage. You need to think about that before you get married, preferably so that it's in the prenuptial. But the question I have, and this goes to the issue of transplants, we have so many people moving into this area from foreign countries like Ohio and Illinois. Oh, that's right. but. You know, they're bringing with them their wills and some of these documents. They don't necessarily, now that they're permanent residents of North Carolina, apply, do they?
Well, you know, when folks move here from other states, and we do have just a tremendous amount of that happening, you know, if they establish residency in North Carolina, which is very easy to do, you know, all it requires is maybe a driver's license or certainly the purchase of a home, anything that would tie them to the state of North Carolina. Then, of course, their estate is going to be interpreted pursuant and be handled and be administered in the state of North Carolina, mm-hmm. even though they have an Ohio or New Jersey or New York will, okay? So, yes, this statute is going to apply if their estate, you know, touches and concerns the state of North Carolina. One thing we certainly want to address before I, and time just goes by so quickly, Lockwood, in 30 minutes, but I want to hasten to say, Lockwood, there are fixes to this issue. Number one, we've already discussed one big fix, which is either a prenuptial or a postnuptial agreement. Uh-huh. The other planning tool, if you will, that we use routinely is that the will of either the husband or the wife says, that I understand that there is an elective share. I have a file where this is being signed actually today, mm-hmm. At about 10 o'clock, I think. The husband says, I understand that this elective share exists, and I hereby devise to my spouse the elective share, but in trust. My wife shall therefore receive all of the income and any principal for care, support, and maintenance, but upon the death of my wife, this trust will collapse and pass to my children from my prior marriage, 1, 2, and 3.
Wow.
And now keep in mind, even after 15 years of marriage, the elective share is 50%.
Right.
So this will would also say that 50% of my estate will go to my children 1, 2, and 3, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The other 50%, however, as a result of the elective share, will go into trust for my wife, and she will receive the income, but upon her death, it will go back to my children.
Got it.
This is a beautiful plan of action for folks that do not have a prenuptial that need to address this issue. And usually it's very palatable in these files. They're just fine with this. I mean, after all, 50% of their net assets are passing to their children. The other 50% is in trust, but it's not lost. When I say lost, let's talk about the alternative. Without the trust, the other 50% would simply pass outright to the surviving spouse. And then, of course, that 50% could very likely, and in almost all files does, then pass to outside of the scope of the children of the first marriage. Mm-hmm. It would go to, you know, wherever it goes under the will of the second to die. You following that,
right.
Lockwood?
Yeah. And by the way,
this is called an elective share trust.
Uh-huh.
The North Carolina legislature, in their wisdom, knew that this issue existed and that there needed to be a, quote, solution. And so they have promulgated this exception to the elective share that relative to this preparation of the trust.
Mm-hmm.
The trustee must be independent. In other words, the trustee cannot be one of the children, one of the prior children.
Right.
Because the idea there is that they might not provide, you know, fairly for the spouse, and so it needs to be someone independent. But it absolutely is a beautiful fix to this issue.
Several items here. One, as we started out the program, Cecil, there are instances where the parents have concerns related to distribution of funds to children in some instances, because quite frankly, there's instances where the children will abuse the money, probably to their own abuse as well. So yeah.
Sometimes the children can't be found.
Right, right.
Sometimes the children are on a government benefit and
uh-huh.
were born with a disability and are, you know, maybe so unfortunately institutionalized or just mm-hmm. simply unable to inherit because it would upset their government benefits.
Right.
So there are all sorts of different reasons why people disinherit their child.
But in the same process here, in this particular case,
The deceased is taking care of the survivor through this trust, which is an indication of care. But at the same time, after the transition of that surviving spouse, that is the death of the surviving spouse, then the money just reverts back to the family of the deceased. You said a very attractive solution. I see it in every regard in that respect. But again, this is sort of thing that a lot of people are just not aware of related to the elective share issue, Cecil.
Mm-hmm.
And so, go ahead.
Yeah. Lockwood, you've just taken over our program, which I thoroughly enjoy. You know, you've always been substitute for years and years, as we know. But we've spoken many times, you know, on the program now for what, 20 years or more,
right,
that it's all about the planning, and it's all about our good listeners out there just asking questions and seeking legal advice. We, of course, at our law firm do not charge for an initial consultation.
Right.
This would come up during that initial consultation. The client then is wide-eyed and, oh my gosh, I can't believe this, but they at least now know about it so that they can seek yet another consultation if that's what they choose to do. It's all about taking the time, our listeners, to seek advice and ask the questions. And and of course, once the questions begin getting asked and get some answers, then of course, finally we can come to some solutions. I had a couple of weeks ago a great group, just a wonderful but typical client, and they actually, like you say, have moved here from a different state. They've been here for a while, four, 5, 6 years. They're at Emerald Isle, living the good life down there, and they came in to update. Their wills were from a different state. They, of course, thought that they were just pro forma. But they're in a second and or third marriage, and they were just flabbergasted by this. And of course, it took them a bit to absorb that they couldn't just say that I want my assets to go to my children, and that my wife doesn't need my assets, my husband doesn't need my assets. But they have gotten some literature which we gave them. And they've read that. They've called back and asked a couple more questions. And they're, of course, you know, under our fold right now. And we're doing the best we can to get them into a plan of action. Those particular folks, I think, due to the facts, and it always turns on the facts, Lockwood, but I think they're going to elect to negotiate and have prepared a post-nuptial agreement, because they really are in a situation due to their net worth where the surviving spouse just simply does not need the resources, and they really do want the resources not only to pass on to their adult children, but now, of course, those children have grandchildren, and so they're wanting their assets to pass on down to their family. So to give them the option of putting half of that net worth into a elective share trust doesn't quite fit for them. They don't need that. The surviving spouse doesn't need half of the estate to live off of. And so they probably, I'm almost certain, are electing to begin the process of having prepared and sign a postnuptial agreement, which will waive this elective share. Now, you know, Lockwood, you know, one of their big questions, this always comes up, and it's just you really have to talk, people ask it usually several times, which is, well my goodness, Cecil, Sharon's just not going to do that.
Right.
John's just not going to do that. He's got all the resources in the world. He's not going to do that. He loves my children. He's got his own children.
Uh-huh.
Are you sure about this? And of course, the answer to that is, well, we know that you, John, are not going to do that, and that you, Mary, are not going to do that. But, you know, what if you are not competent? What if you are infirm? What if there are influences? The case just kind of, the facts just kind of go on and on.
Right.
I mean, I guess, Lockwood, that it's a risk that folks can assume. But that's a big risk, and particularly it's a big risk in any circumstance. But in this particular file, it would be a huge risk because of the fact that the resources are significant.
I think Cecil Harvell with us this morning, Harvell and Collins. You know, Cecil, as we wrap it up, I think the important part is make no assumptions. You said a moment ago they came in to review their will thinking it was pro forma, based on assumptions. And as you were pointing out, and I think this is a case for all of us, the worst thing to do is make those assumptions, even how it's going to all turn out. Cecil Harvell with us this morning. And again, I want to remind you, Harvell and Collins, spell out the word and, harvellandcollins.com. And their number, 726-9050, 252 area code 726-9050. Cecil, as always, thank you.